Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 3rd, 2015. The commission of Tombura County escapes a deadly ambush by suspected members of South Sudan Army.
You know, these are the same peacekeepers and who are soldiers, but those ones are the soldiers. Anyway, the real ghettos, these are the very people doing this kind of destruction.
And UN national staff in Abyei down their tools in protest of unfair payment conditions.
What we want is just a payment US dollar, because Abia is in the middle. It is administrative area. It is neither north nor south. And we are facing difficulties here in terms of feeding our families and some other services.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese local contractors working for the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei are on strike to protest what they say is UN's refusal to pay them in US dollars rather than the local currency. More than 300 UNISFA employees say they will only return to work once their demands are met. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from WOW.
Local UNISFA workers clean buildings, provide security, prepare food and disseminate information to reporters and the public, just to name a few of things they do. UNISFA employees in Abyei say not only should they be paid in US dollars, but complain that UNISFA pays their counterparts in Kadugli, South Kordofan State, higher salaries. Deng Bor, head of the national staff at UNISFA, says the economic hardship facing people in the region prompted workers to go on a strike for better pay. He says with skyrocketing commodity prices, local staff can no longer afford to feed their families on their current salaries.
But what we want is just a payment in US dollar, because Abyei is in the middle. It is administrative area. It is neither north nor south. And we are facing difficulties here in terms of feeding our families and some other services.
Kuol Manyuet, another UNISFA employee, says the declining value of the South Sudanese pounds against the US dollar is making it very difficult to pay for basic necessities.
The exchange rate is very high, and some of us, the children, they are outside South Sudan. And when we change this amount with SSC, it will get less than what to help our family.
Nyan Chol works as an assistant for one of UNISFA's contractors. She says local contractors and employees first raised this kind of complaints in March, but UNISFA all ignored their demands.
This issue started a long time ago with a UNISFA administration whereby our staff were being paid low compared to the staff in Kadugli and other areas in northern Sudan working with UNISFA.
Joel, who also speaks on behalf of individual contractors at UNISFA, says local employees and contractors also want to be paid in US dollars. Bor says local staff and contractors will not go back to work until UNISFA starts paying them in US dollars. UNISFA spokesman Daniel Adekera says the UNISFA administration is aware of the concerns raised by its local staff and is trying to address them.
Well, it's not exactly correct that there has not been any response so far. Engaged them in a series of discussions. We were in touch with New York to put their position across. And so far, the response we've received from New York is positive.
Knowing that UNISFA is working on the problem, Adekera says he hopes local staff and contractors will end their strike and return to work in the next few days. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WOW.
From WOW, we cross to Tombura. The commissioner of Tombura County in Western Equatoria State says he was attacked today near a military barracks by suspected SPLA soldiers while on his way to Sarsuyubu Payam. He was on his way to address disputes between cattle keepers and farmers. Five of the seven people who traveled with the commissioner were wounded. The commissioner says all of them were beaten. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington.
Commissioner Charles Babiro says he narrowly escaped the attack by running into the bush. He says he stayed there along the border with the Central African Republic for nearly 2 hours. Attacks by suspected SPLA soldiers have been reported by local officials and citizens in Western Equatoria for the past several months. The SPLA spokesman in Juba denies the SPLA have attacked civilians, saying that the SPLA only battles gunmen who have been hiding in the state since fighting broke out in Western Equatoria. Commissioner Babiro says that's not true.
These are the army, some of the army. You know, these are the same people, keeper and who are soldiers, but those ones are the soldiers. Anyway, the real traitors. These are the very people doing this kind of destruction.
Charles Kisanga is the former Minister of Information in Western Equatoria State. He says the fighting in Sosiyubu Tombra is exactly the same as attacks that occurred on civilians in Yambio and Mundiri counties. Kisanga says the youth in Mundiri are mobilizing themselves to avenge the attack on the commissioner in Tombra.
It is the same sort of scenario whereby there are some cattle keepers who are supported by elements of the SPLA, and then they usually have these sort of clashes which happened in Merivi, in Mundiri, also in Yambio. I think it is the sort of the same sort of thing that is played up now in Sosiyubu.
Civilians in Tombra are fleeing the town. Babiro says some of the soldiers, who he described as out of hand, are breaking the doors of shops and looting properties of the people in the area. Babiro says no one has been held accountable for the violence in Western Equatoria State since it started.
This is what I believe. It is something harangued. In order to break shops, as I'm talking now, since they've started breaking the shops, most of the shops have been broken now. That people have run away. Some of the soldiers, those who are out of control, are in the market, breaking the shop. I'm just about 1 kilometer from the town.
The fighting in Tombra comes just a day after two teams led by bishops from Juba and Yambio finished a four-day tour to Mundiri to end a similar violence there. For VOA News, I'm Tito Justin in Washington.
Still in Western Equatoria, religious groups and residents are calling on government and international humanitarian groups to save thousands of people in Mundiri from hunger, disease and lack of shelter. The interfaith group says on their fourth-day visit to Mundiri, they have seen the misery and desperate situation of thousands of people, and some of them are dying. Residents like this one, who did not want to be identified, says civilians are dying of hunger, disease and lack of medical care, and they say the government troops deployed to the area are not helping the situation by blocking blocking humanitarian groups from entering the county.
I don't think that the government will do anything there. But it's only what you have to fight for is to fight the government so that they will take away the food from Jambo. Then it will open a way for the humanitarians to go in. You know, the humanitarians are fearing the government troops in Jambo.
Wilson Apai John, who is a resident in Mundiri, he confirms the situation is very bad and says there are people who are hiding in the bushes with their families.
I'm talking to you from the bush. We have run away from the town. We are now in the bush with the children. Of course, people are suffering from rain and all this. So actually, the situation is the children and the elders is very bad because the sound of the guns, you know, we need civilians. We do not want the sound of the guns in the town. So we came running out, and that's why we are talking to you.
Wilson says they cannot go back home because they are afraid. He says the government has to convince the people that the fighting has stopped.
Well, this has to be said by our senior people like commissioners and all this. When they see the situation according to their own, then when they tell us, then we will see. But otherwise, the civilians and the citizens are afraid because sometimes when you go, you meet with the armed people like soldiers, then you fight
and then they fight, and then this is what people are afraid of.
The people of Mundri and the Interfaith Council are appealing to the government and the humanitarian groups to provide immediate help. That report was prepared by VOA fellow Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington. Health officials say they have been able to contain cholera outbreak in the capital, Juba. Dozens of people died when the outbreak was declared in June. But with recent heavy rains, officials warn another outbreak could occur if preventive measures are not taken. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Dr. John Romono, Director of Preventive Medicine at the South Sudan National Health Ministry, made this announcement at a Juba News conference.
Today, the Ministry of Health would like to inform the public that cholera outbreak that hit the country 5 months ago has been brought under control.
The outbreak was contained following joint efforts by UNICEF, the World Health Organization, or WHO, the French medical charity, MSF, and the South Sudan Health Ministry. Health officials reported the outbreak in June after laboratory tests confirmed the first case in the UN Protection of Civilians camp in Juba, which hosts thousands of internally displaced persons, or IDPs. Cholera claimed 47 lives before it was contained. Officials confirmed more than 1,800 cases, the majority of them being in and around Juba. Besides Juba, the outbreak occurred in central Equatoria State's Kajukeji County and in Jonglei State's Makwach Payam in Bor County. Juba was hardest hit with more than 1,600 confirmed cases and 45 deaths. Rumono says given South Sudan's limited infrastructure for enabling efficient sanitation, safe water supply and effective waste disposal, collective efforts are needed to prevent another serious outbreak.
Water from all water tankers will be chlorinated before distribution. Water quality monitoring in different areas of Juba to monitor the safety of the water being used by the population. Juba City Council will continue to regulate and strengthen certification of food vendors.
Health Minister Dr. Ria Guy Cork says he plans to deploy more than 7,000 health personnel in villages across the country to teach citizens basic hygiene practices. Rumono is urging the public to remain vigilant and to seek immediate medical attention if they saw any signs of cholera, including diarrhea or vomiting. And he says practicing good hygiene is critical, always washing hands before cooking and eating food, after using a latrine or toilet, after wiping a baby's bottom and before breastfeeding a baby. It's also important to keep drinking containers covered and clean and to wash and peel fruits before eating them. WHO country representative in South Sudan, Dr. Abdulmumini Osman, says more must be done to keep the cholera and other killer diseases at bay.
The fight against diseases has just begun. We must initiate several actions in order to fight communicable diseases in this country.
Osman is also calling on local community leaders to get involved in efforts to prevent future outbreaks of cholera, saying maintaining cleanliness is the key to preventing any outbreak. Cholera often breaks where there is overcrowding and inadequate access to clean water, trash collection, and proper toilets. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we talk about how South Africans are fighting HIV/AIDS. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most annoying question that people ask you?
The most annoying question to me that people do ask is when you ask about my clan, like when I went for an interview and you asked which tribe are you. So it is so annoying.
How was your night? I actually feel, instead of thinking about something that is already passed, why don't you ask me or maybe wish me something about the morning, maybe good morning or something like that. It will be better.
The most annoying question people ask me is when people ask me why I am who I am. because I did not make a decision to be who I am. So I think that's the most annoying question people ask me.
The question that I don't like is that they ask me, why are you big? I'm not big because of my reason. I just grew up big like this.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about HIV/AIDS. Despite South Africa being at the center of the HIV/AIDS pandemic since the beginning, the disease is still underreported as an official cause of death. In fact, new estimates say 93% of HIV deaths are wrongly attributed to other causes. Researchers say that is hindering efforts to monitor the country's HIV control programs. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The International AIDS Society says the good news is AIDS mortality in South Africa peaked in 2007. It's been declining with the introduction of antiretroviral therapy. The bad news is, despite the decline, HIV remains the leading cause of death. Dr. Debbie Bradshaw is director of the Burden of Disease Research Unit at the South African Medical Research Council. She and her colleagues took a close look at the official mortality figures from 1997 to 2010.
My team has been working on this for the last 15 years or so as we saw the emergence of the AIDS epidemic. Around the year 2000, we realized the prevalence of HIV was increasing rapidly, and the death statistics produced in the country were not showing AIDS as a cause of death because it was not being reported.
In the year 2000, when South Africa hosted the world's largest AIDS conference, then-President Thabo Mbeki refused to acknowledge a virus was the cause. Hundreds of scientists and others signed the Durban Declaration, criticizing his stand.
There was also quite a political challenge at that point with the AIDS dissidents starting to become vocal and creating confusion. So we were quite determined to try and understand if HIV was having an impact on mortality. So we set up the system of tracking numbers, really focusing on the age at which the deaths were occurring.
Bradshaw and her team track the causes of death listed for specific age groups that typically would be affected by HIV. The official cause of death for many was attributed to ill-defined natural causes, along with tuberculosis, diarrhea, meningitis, or respiratory infections. The study found these were pseudonyms for HIV/AIDS.
Without treatment, these causes were ending up being fatal.
Bradshaw says while denial has declined, there continues to be a great deal of stigma in South Africa surrounding HIV/AIDS.
There's a huge unwillingness to talk about HIV. Doctors are not keen to write it on the death notification forms. You know, it's left a huge mark that people don't want to talk about it.
Stigma has major consequences for preventing infections and treating those already infected.
We are very concerned because unless we can really track what's going on and know whether the treatment is making a difference and know whether the incidence is coming down, it makes it really difficult to respond to the epidemic.
Bradshaw says it's disappointing that despite government rollout of antiretroviral drugs around 2006, it did not become more acceptable to acknowledge the disease. At the height of the epidemic, it's estimated there were 700 AIDS deaths each day. Bradshaw says that figure was around 560 per day in 2010, and has declined further since then. However, she adds, it's still a sizable number. Also, while the mortality rate is declining, many people continue to be infected, keeping the epidemic alive.
It's difficult difficult to measure the rate, but at least 1 to 2% of the population is getting infected each year, and that's just not going to help us get rid of the epidemic.
It's estimated that 12% of South Africa's population, about 53 million, is infected with HIV. Bradshaw estimates there were nearly 3 million deaths from AIDS in South Africa by 2010. She says had antiretrovirals been introduced much sooner, about 1 million lives could have been saved. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The UN Refugee Agency says a global 10-year campaign launched 1 year ago to end statelessness is making progress, but not enough. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
An estimated 10 million people have fallen through the cracks and are not considered citizens of any country. They are stateless and as such are denied benefits that come with a birth certificate and a nationality. The UN Refugee Agency reports a child is born stateless at least every 10 minutes. Assistant High Commissioner for Protection Volker Turk tells VOA, a stateless child will grow up with his or her aspirations for a meaningful life frustrated. He says statelessness takes a serious psychological toll and undermines a child's esteem.
They are trapped in a bit of a vicious circle because they compare, obviously, themselves with others, and they don't understand why is it that the person who looks just like me is a national, can go to schooling without problems, can go to healthcare services without problems, and I can't. What's different?
The UNHCR reports stateless young people also face discrimination, stigmatization, and harassment, and are more vulnerable to exploitation. Statelessness exists on all continents. People sometimes become stateless when a country dissolves, as happened in the former Soviet Union, or when a new country is born, such as South Sudan. Gender discrimination also plays a role. Many states do not allow a mother to confer her nationality upon her child. Volker Turk says statelessness can be resolved.
For instance, in Côte d'Ivoire, in the Ivory Coast, you had a statelessness problem in the past, which was resolved through the adoption of a nationality law. So it also shows if you have an interest and a political will, you can actually resolve them by granting nationality to people who have been habitually resident in that country for a long time.
The UNHCR urges all states to ensure universal birth registration to allow mothers to pass on their nationality to their children and eliminate laws that deny children nationality because of their ethnicity, race, or religion. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For more news on refugees, for the first time in history, the International Olympic Committee is allowing highly qualified refugees to compete under the Olympic flag. This comes at a time when the United Nations Refugee Agency says worldwide displacement of civilians has increased. SINBO reports the new rule could have a big impact on aspiring Olympic athletes from South Sudan.
Loss is a reality that many refugees are all too familiar with. Loss of home, country, and many times, even loved ones. IOC Chief Thomas Bach of Germany says the International Olympic Committee is all too aware of these circumstances, especially for athletes.
Having no national team to belong to, having no flag to march behind, having no national anthem to be played for them, these refugee athletes will be welcomed to the Olympic Games with the Olympic flag and with the Olympic anthem.
Bach made the announcement to the UN General Assembly last week. He also called for a resolution to demand that all UN members recognize a truce during the 2016 Summer Games in Brazil. The resolution, entitled Building a Peaceful and Better World Through Sport and the Olympic Ideal, was supported by 180 out of 193 member states. It calls for the Olympic truce to be respected from 7 days before the start of the Olympic Games until 7 days after the Paralympic Games, which follow the Olympics. Bach says the Olympics symbolize tolerance, solidarity, and peace. South Sudanese marathon runner Gwor Macaire, who ran independently under the Olympic flag in 2012, says that message will resonate strongly with refugees around the world.
It's significant because
is give opportunity to refugees, and it give a hope. That's the thing about the sport and the Olympic, the spirit of the sport.
McCare, known as the athlete with no country in the 2012 Games, says he personally knows how important this recognition will be to millions of refugees worldwide.
Wherever they go, they will say, okay, I am a refugee and I have opportunity in the international community, and I can compete. I can be an athlete. I can be a world champion with no fear saying I don't have a paperwork. You see, I don't have a nationality and I will not be able to compete. So for the IOC to make such a decision is actually giving a great spirit to all the refugees youth across all over the world.
McCare says since refugees have faced so much adversity, they are mentally strong. He says the Olympics are an important opportunity for world-class refugee athletes to overcome unimaginable odds.
I'm pretty sure there were a lot of, some of them were athletes in their own country. But now with the dilemma and the situation they are in, there might be feeling that everything is falling apart and there is the end of it. But I would, my message to them is to keep their hope alive and focus.
The 2016 Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro will take place from August 5th to the 21st. They will be followed by the Paralympic Games from September 7th to the 18th. McCare has been training in Kenya with other South Sudanese long-distance runners to compete for South Sudan in the 2016 Olympics. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Support staff and local contractors at the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei are on strike to protest what they call the UN's refusal to pay for their services in U.S. dollars rather than South Sudanese pounds. More than 300 UNISFA employees say they will only go back on the job once their demands are met. Local UNISFA workers clean buildings, provide security, prepare food, and provide information to reporters, among other things. UNISFA employees in Abyei say not only should they be paid in U.S. dollars, but complain that UNISFA pays their counterparts in South Kordofan State higher salaries. Religious groups and locals are calling on government and international humanitarian groups to save tens of thousands of people in Mundri County of Western Equatoria State from hunger, disease, and lack of shelter. Members of an interfaith group say on their recent four-day visit to Mundri, they witnessed thousands of people in dire straits. Residents say the situation is not being helped by government troops deployed to the area who are blocking humanitarian groups from entering the county. And finally, the commissioner of Western Equatoria's Tembura County says he was attacked today near a military barracks by suspected Espule soldiers while on his way to Soros Yubupayam. He was on his way to address disputes between cattle keepers and farmers. Five of the seven people who were traveling with the commissioner were wounded. The commissioner says all of them were beaten. Commissioner Charles Babiro says he narrowly escaped the attack by running into the bush. He stayed there along the border with the Central African Republic for nearly 2 hours. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that's the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Tong Tong by Sweet J from Western Equatoria State. We have been listening to Sweet Jay with the song Tong Tong. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us tonight. You can leave a message on our Facebook page about what you like and what you don't like about the show. Remember to be with us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.